Hey guys, welcome to Let's Process This with Melinda Hill.
We are happy you're here. We, meaning me, pretending I'm a we for some reason. Hi. Let's Process This is a podcast about processing and overcoming trauma and transforming it into creative treasure and life treasure, because we are not defined by what happened to us, but we are defined by what we do with what happens to us. Hello. We also talk creative process, like how does stuff get made? How are people making things? How are people making it through things? My intention is that you will feel inspired and empowered and illuminated by the insights that you find here. And also, of course, entertained. Some quick announcements for you. If you're so inspired, please support this podcast by subscribing for free wherever you get your pods and rating it and leaving a nice review. Yummy, yummy review time. You can become a patron now directly on anchor.com or on patreon.com. So hop over there and become a patroon. You can access all this stuff at my website, melindahill.com. If you can do all or any of that, we are so grateful. We, of course, just meaning me. Another announcement for you, very exciting. My comedy special, Inappropriate, is now out. What? Yes! I am so excited to share this comedy special with you. You can get it at melindahill.com or wherever you get your specials. It's also a comedy album, and you can get that wherever you get your comedy albums. The special is called Melinda Hill, Inappropriate. Few people said a few things about it. Hollywood Chicago says, combine the hilarity of prime observational comedy with the zen of inner peace, and you have Melinda Hill's stand-up special, Inappropriate. The sharp master of laughs delivers an hour of riffs on her life and her loves. Off the Tracks goes on to say, Melinda's special is bold, funny, and deep. A hilarious comedy hour jam-packed with laughs. Speaks to her development as a joke writer and deliverer, but also arrives at exactly the right time. Ooh, we love arriving at the right time. Gotta love that divine timing. Guys, did I mention that we are so happy that you are here today? Thank you so much for all of your support. Let's get into it, shall we? Hi guys, so I'm really excited to talk with my friend Holly Ramos today. She's a singer-songwriter from New York City, living in LA for almost 2 decades now. Her work has been produced by Lucinda Williams and featured in several feature films. Her band, Oh So My Brain, includes bassist Norwood Cheek and drummer David Avery, and their debut single, Better Now, was just released on Velvet Elk Records. The flip side, God Only Knows, comes out December 4th, along with a vinyl 7-inch. I've known Holly for a few years now. I've opened for her band. I'm doing stand-up, and she's just an amazing person. I've watched the Oscars with her and her husband, Tom. I've been at her dance parties, and I love her. So I'm sure you will too. Here's Holly Ramos. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Melinda. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing all right.
I love your purple hair. What did you use to achieve that?
I use Manic Panic Cotton Candy Pink.
Okay, that's so funny because I'm wanting to do pink also. I've never done pink. And I just was Googling, and there's like a million kinds, and I landed on Manic Panic, and they had like cotton candy. So would you recommend it? How long does it last?
Yeah. On unprocessed hair, it comes out pretty fast. On processed hair, you know, a little while. It, you know, it depends, but a few washes, three or four.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It looks great. How are you? Okay, first of all, thank you everyone for joining us. This is Holly Ramos. Holly, I love your new song. Do you want to talk about it? It's so good. Like, I watched the music video, Better Now, by Oh So My Brain, and Holly's band, and I can't stop. I keep hearing it in my mind. It's so catchy. What's the story with that song?
Yay. The story is, I grew up just listening to 60s and 70s pop, like oldie station. Like, I know every single lyric to every song on 101 FM. And I just have a certain pop sensibility that mixes with punk and with rock. And I wrote it, and it just seemed like the song we need to visualize this election and the future. It needed to get out.
Yeah, for sure. It could, because it's so positive. And how long did it take you to write that song, or what was your process?
It's called Better Now, and it's about, it's actually about the inside job of, you know, like, you're messed up or you have problems and you do the work, as you talk about, and it gets better, right? So, and then I used external examples, like my grandmother's big scar she had on her chest, you know, I fell out of bed twice and have scars around both eyes. So I talk about like external scars, and then, you know, gets better.
Oh, so that's the, that's the stars around the eyes line, is that you fell out of your bed?
Yeah, scars on both sides. Yeah, when I was little. And it says, you know, cuts never heal if you don't want to feel. So we got to feel it. Don't fight it. Feel it.
That is so good. I have chills. That's exactly like a very similar message to my comedy special, which is about, if you don't heal your trauma, you continue to recreate it.
Always. I loved your comedy special. It was great. It was so good to laugh, and everyone should watch it.
Really? Thank you.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you. So since my comedy special is called Inappropriate, I'm asking people, what do you personally find inappropriate?
What do I find inappropriate?
What does that mean to you, and what does appropriate mean to you?
Mm-hmm. Two different questions. So inappropriate is sort of not acceptable in a situation, right? Would be the definition. So you might be in a work situation and it would be inappropriate to say, use the F word that you might use with your friends, right? So it's situational, what is okay. And, you know, but what's inappropriate to me, I think, is anything non-consensual, right? Anything that is not, that's invading like my idea, right? And I think that includes, so if you're not of a group, you know, and you're not sure if you should talk about that group a certain way, don't do it. And if you are you know, male and someone else is female and something maybe you're not sure, don't do it, right? Or ask. You can always get clarity. I love questions. Can ask.
You know, that's such a good point, is like, I feel like if people asked more questions, they would know better how to navigate. We do need to ask for help. Like, what is appropriate here? We don't know, especially the landscape is changing. Holly, tell me about where were you born? How did you come to be the fabulous Holly that we know today?
I don't have my reading glasses on, so I'm not participating with all these sweet people. However, sending my love, I'll let you do it all. So I was born in Manhattan. I was born and raised working class, New York City, beautiful pre-war apartment, which has a sunken living room and great bathroom, but it was one bedroom for four people.
Where in New York?
What's that?
Where in New York?
I grew up in Inwood at the tip of Manhattan.
Okay.
215th Street.
Okay.
And it's very working class and small townish, actually, even though it's Manhattan. And it's still a place you wanted to get out of, So we took the subway. The subway was right there, and you could take the subway down and get off at West 8th Street, West 4th Street. And that's where, it was happening, That was my access to the West Village. And then I would walk across town to the East Village, and I was, got into music always and got on the music scene. I was on the hardcore scene, and we were anarchists and, teenage anarchists. And that's how I grew up evolving from there.
Who were the people in your scene, when it started? Who were some of the people that we would know?
It was real specific, The hardcore scene was really, it was ahead of the curve, right? It was super underground. There was no access really to it. You just had to find it. It's not about Googling. You just had to find these weird bands and this weird, radio, college radio that would play, have one show or something, and you would tape the show, on a recorder, things like that. Because I'm, it's from the prehistoric era. So there were at the early, the beginning of hardcore, there was 10 bands, the Stimulators, Nick Martin, and Harley was the drummer. There was Dave Reagan Youth, Steven Surgeon passed away. There was the False Prophets. There was Heart Attack, which was Jesse Mound's band. Misguided, which was, everyone was a little arty. I think a little less, what hardcore became was a really specific style that just started a tiny bit later than when I first came on it, So the Bad Brains were the great, brilliant band from then.
Okay, so you and Jesse are songwriting partners.
We are.
And you both do such cool, you're both so talented. When you met each other, did you just know this is going to be a creative soulmate of sorts, or how did that go down?
No, we met at a Black Flag show at the Left Bank, and I think it's Mount Vernon was the town. And so bands would tour through, and they'd play these little, clubs, and then they'd play in suburbs or nearby towns, and everyone would, take the bus to Philly or, go see them because it was so limited at the time, right? And it was I think it was Memorial Day weekend, so it was I knew that there was no school on Monday, and Black Flag played on a Sunday night, and I went with my friend and my sister, and I guess I was 15, and so I talked to these two guys, came over and started talking to us, Danny and Jesse, and they were like, oh, the Angelic Upstarts are coming out, we're going to go check out the band. And I was like, okay, talk to you later. And Danny said, after the Upstarts, do you want to go outside? Which was code for go kiss or something. And I didn't really know what that meant. So I was like, okay. And then during the Upstarts, Jesse came back and said, do you want to go outside? And I was like, okay. So it was really just a twist of fate. His timing, and then we just started hanging out.
And then you guys were, how long were you together?
I think off and on for probably about 4 years. And then, you know, and then off and on friendship, it was a little bumpy at times for, till now. So
that's great. What, and did you guys start writing music together while you were together?
We did, right? I wrote on his, on Subliminal Seduction, uncredited, I think, but we wrote this song, like a political anthem about women's rights, and it was kind of like hit over the head, you know, but the brilliant line that I wrote, so good for like a teenager, was, out of the womb, your blanket is pink or blue. And that was it, you know, we started right there.
Great. And like, what was your, like, when you guys write songs together, how long does it take? Is it like a quick thing where you finish each other's sentences, or is it like, what's the process there?
It depends. It can be like, you know, in a 1 or 2 hour session, we might finish something, or sometimes it's, I have to do everything in small bites because I have kids and I don't have like unending free time, but sometimes it's a, you know, it might take 1 or 2 or 3 sessions to finish a song. It's pretty quick, I think.
And so like what, so how was your journey like from being, you know, so you were in bands already as a teen, you're with Jesse, you're writing songs. Like, did you were you up against any obstacles, or what, was it always smooth sailing for you?
It was all obstacles. I wasn't in bands when I met Jesse. I didn't have a band for until my mid-20s, I think I started for, or early 20s. And I definitely had like fear of, you know, visibility and going out and doing it. You know, I never did anything kind of publicly until then. So, you know, there's a lot of internal and external struggles. I came from a really messed up, crazy house. So everything was super loaded and super, you know, skewed, right? And then I made a band. That was really just like kind of, you know, in part of the process, it's like I became really promiscuous as a way to like take back my power, you know, that period, which is great, which everyone should do. And it might not be the end of the road, but it's okay if it is, right? So I did that period in a band and just having a lot of rage. It was a really great place to like get out big feelings. And then, you know, things shift, right? Consciously, you want to shift it. Like, oh, maybe this isn't how I totally want to live. And you figure things out and get support and do other things.
So like, what, was there a point where you were like, I'm just kind of done with this and I just need to do something else? Or like, what helped you to move on, I guess? With like, that sounds like it was like working, then it wasn't working anymore. And then you were like, I'm gonna do something else.
Yes.
Cause you're talking about being in a band, everyone's seeing how cute you are. Everyone's hitting on you after the show, whatever. And so it's just kind of a time. It's a scene, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great time and a great scene. You know, we had a club. Jesse and I had a nightclub together. I DJed, and it was really, you know, a lot of fun. And that was all about, like, you know, decadence and staying out all night. And we do it in lofts. So it wasn't commercial spaces. So we would just go till the next morning, you know, and that's like a great way to stay alive. You know, that's like because whatever else is going on, whatever negative things are in your life, you know, you're dancing and laughing and being in joy pretty much daily. So I think that's like a really great bandage, you know, that can kind of sustain maybe an unsustainable lifestyle. But then it's always just the pain gets to be bigger than the solution. You know, the pain gets to be bigger than the self-medication or the whatever you're doing, you know? And when you find yourself in a pain that you can't fix, which is great, which is like trauma recreating itself. You know, you it's like universe or whatever it is going to say like, okay, you know, I'm upping the ante. I just see, you know, like I didn't have the greatest parental figure, guidance, leaders, whatever the word is. I didn't have the greatest parentalness modeled for me. So the universe kind of kicks it in, you know, I'll do it for you here. This is going to suck. You know, it's starting to not be good. So, you know, let's figure out a different way.
Were you guys doing like a lot of drugs at this nightclub?
You know, I probably tried every drug, but I wasn't the biggest drug or alcohol person. I didn't really need it. I knew how to like check out on all kinds of different levels, you know?
Yeah.
But everyone, yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone else, it was all about sex and drugs and rock and roll, right?
That sounds like really fun because, I mean, I feel like we're so lucky that we had these scenes. Like, I didn't have a scene like that. I guess I was in kind of a bit of a music scene, just always dating musicians and hanging out at the underground clubs. But then I got into comedy and I felt like it was kind of like the family I always wanted to have because I always saw so many people like everywhere I went. And you don't really notice till you're not doing it anymore. Like, it's like, oh, I kind of – like, I guess I got sick of seeing everyone all the time. And then now I'm kind of like, oh, those were special times. Yeah.
Yeah, it's you know, it wasn't like, it wasn't a pandemic that ended it for me. It wasn't like sort of ended for me. Definitely the social world, who doesn't miss that, right? Whatever social joys we had, you know, they'll be back soon. Let's hope, right? Soon. But yeah, this was just kind of like a lifestyle that is great until it's not. You know, it's very superficial. There's a lot of glamour. There's a lot of, you know, just like external validations. You know, it was like the internet, but real life. You know, you dressed up, you looked great, everyone looked great. We hung out and we danced and we, you know, felt all of this divine decadence, you know, from each other in real life, you know, together. And that's great, but it's, you know, it is external, right? It's external validation. It's an external value system of all kinds of things. And I think that at some point, you know, I was just like a little more interested about the inside part.
Yeah. So you're a very insightful person and very wise. And like, what kind of things have helped you? Like, what's really helped you in your life? Like, what modalities and methods do you use?
What helps me? I meditate every day. Meditation is great. I do yoga.
What kind of meditation do you do?
I just sit. I don't know. I sit and breathe. And yeah, I do yoga and I, those really help. And then I eat really well. I think that like food definitely affects your, you know, I'm very like clean in terms of substances. Like I don't have caffeine because I'm just very sensitive instrument. So anything kind of like throws me.
What kind of food do you eat?
I'm not vegetarian, but I eat consciously. Like I eat a lot of, I cook a lot. I make very low fat steamed vegetables, brown rice, and I eat like organic meats, things. Oh, pretty much everything organic that's sort of consciously grown or if it's an animal product, consciously, you know, handled, right?
So those three things are super important. Like those are game changers, yoga, meditation, and food.
Yeah, I think so.
And did anything else, what really help you like overcome any personal obstacles? Because now I feel like things are really happening for you. Like all this cool stuff is happening with your music, but also you have an amazing family, an amazing husband, and you're happy and you guys travel. And so not during the pandemic, but like, how did you get from there to there?
So like therapy, basically, you know, really just like, and trauma therapy, like kind of sitting with what's wrong and what can we do about it and what do you want, kind of a thing. Like I always say, about 95% of my friends from my growing up and my all of my exes, a good 95% are don't have kids, you know. Very few people from my past have kids. And that's really specific, you know. We all were very specific about that. We just weren't maternal, and we all had reasons why not to be, I suppose, you know. And then, like, I started to want that. And so it was like a journey to get to being, like, living a certain lifestyle, which is just really not conducive to a family, right? Because you maybe your fear of intimacy, because maybe you had trauma around stuff growing up, so it's hard to be in a relationship or be faithful or stay through it with somebody, or, you know, or want to do the parent thing, which is a really specific choice. And I'll just say throw in right now, no one should have to be a parent if they don't want to, you know? And so women's rights are so important right now. I can't even conceive of forcing somebody to be a parent because they misused or didn't use birth control or made a mistake or were bullied into it or thought they weren't going to get pregnant or whatever the friggin' reason is, you know. I can't even conceive of the sick cruelty and violence of that, you know. So I'm a big supporter of abortion rights for everybody, free, legal, and safe, as my friends at Thank God for Abortion say. Shout out to them. but you know, it's a really, like, I really support people not wanting to do it and not doing it. But, like, I sort of wanted to, and I was on a track not to, you know. I didn't want to at the time. And then, like, I started to have recovery in my life. I started to be in my body and kind of know what I wanted and become who I am. And that was one of the things I wanted to do. And I feel really blessed and lucky that, you know, I get to be a mom and that I got to have recovery around it and get to do it and picked people in my life that were, you know, and that was all conscious. I stopped dating guys who, you talked about it. How do you date non-available? How do you date people who are available? And it was like, I was like, oh, just stop dating someone who's unavailable. I knew what that looked like. It looked pretty good because they're pretty cute, you know. and then I was like, just don't even. It was like a horse in blinders. Don't go there. Don't go there. Don't go there. And then, like, some nice doctor would ask me on a date and I would go and it would be really uncomfortable and boring. And I was like, this is okay. I'm practicing dating available people. It was really hard at first because the joy of, there's a whole setup in that game, you know, and there's something, oh, it seems so great and so hot and so handsome. There's unavailableness that's going to like break your heart. Right. And then you find out you're the unavailable one. And then you have to sit in the company of available people and you just want to run the other direction because it's incredibly uncomfortable. And then you do it until you can bear the feelings. And it's still I still have to sometimes, you know, I still want to run sometimes, but I always remember, like, to what? What am I going to run to? That old way, which just didn't work. It's too painful, you know?
Yeah, well, it's that familiarity with chaos that feels like love, or like it feels like, but it's like just your family chaos. So it's just familiar. Wow, that's great. So you just had to like what kind of therapy did you do?
you know, in New York, it's like you just sit there talking about the shit, you know. which worked enough, you know, it worked enough. But, you know, LA, we got all kinds of magical, airy shit here, right? So yeah. I just do somatic experiencing.
I love somatic. And
it's great.
Yeah.
Because it gets to the cells, because, you know, it's cellular. All the patterns and all the things you do, all the things that were done to you that inform you are, you know, so cellular. So we work from there.
How do you describe somatic? Like, what, how is it different than talk therapy?
I don't know.
It's kind of
you
like,
have to just do it. It's feel therapy. Yeah.
So you, when you have, for instance, the experience of being happy in a situation that's safe and calm, when you're able to actually feel that in your body, it's easier to, I guess, call it into your life because you've experienced it. But that's what somatic is. Is that an accurate? I don't know if that's accurate. But just that talking about it sometimes can keep you in the talking about it. But somatic gets you into the feeling of a new experience.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I think that is an aspect of it. I don't know either. It's hard for me to define it or explain it. But I think it's also feeling through the stuff that you're keeping too, you know, like sometimes you have to feel through that to move out of it.
Oh, that's so true. You have to grieve fully to get it out.
Yeah.
You have to process it. You have to stop avoiding it. The only way out is through.
Yeah.
How did you meet your husband?
I met my husband, through a whole course of events. Basically, I'd come out to LA to for a film that I was in. I was in an indie film, and it was playing in some film festival. And I came out and I stayed with my friend, and she came with me to the show, the screening. And at the screening, we ran into a guy who she was like, "Oh, that's that guy from my yoga class. I think he likes me." And she was struggling with like some of the things that, you know, we struggled with dating unavailable people, right? That's like a you know, just a thing of your youth, like, oh God, when are we gonna stop doing this? And so we hung out. The guy came over and hung out with us all night, and he was so nice. And I was like, oh, you should check him, you should hang out with him. He seems like such a great person, you know? And so she sort of agreed to, and they went on a date, and I was just here for a few days, and they sort of became an item right then and there. And then I was the third wheel, and it was sort of annoying. This is my version of the story. Theirs is probably different, but leaving, I was getting my suitcase to go to the airport, and the guy came over and said, "You should meet my best friend, Tom, in New York." He and I was like, whatever, you know, I just was like, you're the kind of, you're like, took away my friend, you know, like we were hanging out, and now, great, I don't care really what you're saying. And he said, we were best friends since kindergarten. And then, and I was already like, kind of trying to date people who, you know, were the kind of people I wanted to date. And, that seemed like such a great recommendation, and somebody who was friends with somebody who seemed really cool since kindergarten. Like, that spoke to me. I just like remembered the name and got off the plane and went to, with my suitcase, I went to the screening in New York of the film. It was like the premiere in New York at Gen Arts. My family came and friends were there, and we went to the after party, and I still had my silly suitcase. And at the after party, somebody said something and whatever, they were talking, and I had some clue, and I was like, "You're Tom." And I knew that it was him before we met. Like, I just knew that the reason the friend was at the premiere was because he was friends with the director. He went to school with the director, and so did Tom. So he was also at the premiere because of that reason. So it was like this funny coincidence that, and then I knew who he was before we met. And his version is different. but it was sort of a setup that he was sort of recommended to me that morning in LA. And then I ran into him accidentally in New York that evening. And I was like, we should hang out sometime or whatever we said. And then it was a slow process because he was, you know, like a really solid, available person. And it was really uncomfortable for me. So I really sort of kept my, you know, kept coming back, but kept wanting to run away. So it was a long process to settle in.
What's his version?
He thinks he talked to me first. He seems to remember that he came up to me and spoke to me.
So, like, what helped you to just stay and just, you know, continue to show up?
You know, I had read some goofy books about dating. Trying to think what exactly it was. But, you know, like some like little thing I picked up was like, go where it's warm, you know? And like we would have a date and I would have all kinds of uncomfortable feelings and I'd be like, I just want to break up. But he hasn't done anything wrong or bad or nothing has happened that I should do that. You know, it's just sort of this running feeling. In fact, he's actually really nice and really great. And I just sort of have to get used to it. So I would just come back another day. And we had, you know, it was hard for us to find like places that we could really connect, you know. We were both pretty different. And the thing, one of our big connectors was Gene Hackman. We both liked Gene Hackman. And I think early date, we went to like French Connection at like the Thalia or something or Film Forum. And then the Royal Tenenbaums came out and we were like, oh, Gene Hackman. So every time we kind of hit a wall, we'd say, oh, what? Oh, he was in Poseidon Adventure. Let's watch that.
Luckily, he did a lot of movies.
Yes. It was a process and Gene was part of it.
Wow. That's really inspiring. I love that. So now you're a mom of two beautiful children. You're happily married. You've been living in London for a year. You're back here. And now you're rolling out these songs. So what's happening here? Because this is so exciting. I love your new song so much. I can't wait to hear the other ones. Like, tell us what's happening. First of all, how did this band get together? Tell me everything.
The band started because I haven't played, you know, I sort of put something out. Like, it seems like I do a release once every decade, you know. My band Fur came out at some point, and then I did a solo release at some point. And it's not a prolific thing for me. I do write with other people, but putting out my own stuff is a lot of work. Independently, you know, making something happen, you know, is a lot of energy. So I hadn't played in years. I had a daughter in public school, and somebody involved in like an event thing was like, do you want to play the Halloween party in the dad's band? And I was like, okay, I guess so. And, because I liked him. He was my friend. And I was like, oh, yeah, we'll make some music together. I haven't done that in a while. And then I found out the dad's band, which, you know, was sort of ruffling my feathers. The dad's band, that's kind of why I played. I was like, I got to represent, you know, for all these little girls in public school needs to see it, you know. They were playing at a certain hour that I couldn't be there, and he's like, I'll just get you a time slot earlier, you can just do like a show, you know, do a solo show, do some songs. And I was like, okay. And then it started to dawn on me, like, oh my god, I have a little kid, I have two little kids, this is so much work, I have to like rehearse and get, you know, perform in front of people, and I don't want to, and maybe I should just cancel it. I think I'm going to cancel it. And then I remembered I have to represent because of the dad's band. I have to be the mom who plays, you know? And it was really a calling. It was sheer service. I was like, only 3 more days and then it's over forever. Phew, I can do it. Only 2 more days. Because it's my day, you know, my day is like, if I try to do yoga, I'm in downward dog. Okay, it's in the kitchen. Okay, take a breath in. And no, it's not ready yet. Okay, I'll let you know. Oh, wait, you need paper? Pause. Here it is. Come back. Run, pause. And down the door. You know, and then if I'm like meditating, I'm here. Okay, I know. Just leave mommy alone for 5 minutes. Oh, okay. Hold on. I'll come clean it up. Broke. Are you bleeding? Do you need a Band-Aid? Okay. I'll just hang out for a little. That's what it looks like. That's what my day is like. Even rehearsing for a show, I'm playing, I'm singing the song. I got to run the set every day. I'm singing, Mom! Okay, coming. And I'm like singing the song, playing the guitar, walking down the stairs. What is it? What do you need? Okay, here, use this. Walking back up. You know, like there's no big time block for me, you know, it's a pretty 24/7 job. So it was a lot to rehearse for this show, and I did it. And I asked Norwood to play a song with me because it was a Halloween theme. And I was like, we'll cover White Stripes, Little Ghost, but I don't have the bandwidth to figure out the chords or learn a new song. So Norwood, do you want to back me on this song? We'll sing it together. And I knew Norwood because he was a parent too. And we had mentioned, we both knew we had musical histories, and we always would casually mention in the fleeting moments, maybe we should do something sometime, but it never happened, you know. And then I was like, come play this White Stripes song with me. And he's like, great, let's do it. And we did it, and the show ended, and I was just like, I need to go home and take a nap. That was like all this energy, you know, and you perform and it's like all this adrenaline and all this, there's so much. And I barely had seconds to myself, you know. And I went home. I literally went home and took a nap with my little one who was napping. And then I got a text from Norwood that said, we are definitely making a band. And I texted back, uh-oh, because I was like, yay, I finished and I never have to do this again.
Uh-huh. Oh, my God.
And he showed the text to his wife, and she was like, well, at least you didn't say no. And then we had a conversation later where he sort of reminded me why I might want to make music again. And so we evolved from there. And we did this recording and I really like it. And it's just getting a lot of attention, which feels nice, you know. It feels nice to put something out and have people just respond and like it.
Where can people get it? And how did you make that music video? It looks very cool, but very homemade. It looks like you did it at Moonlight Rollerway, the Silver Lake Res, like local, but it looks awesome.
Yeah. It's totally homemade. It's all just home movies basically and stuff like that, you know. And it's people can get it. It's so our band is Oso My Brain, OSO My Brain. You can follow us at Oso My Brain, which stands for Other Side of My Brain. And you can Google Better Now, Oso My Brain on YouTube and see the video, and you can buy it on Spotify and get it on iTunes and anywhere that, any digital platform, I think. And then you can also buy, we have a vinyl single that is still shipping, so it'll be in around Thanksgiving, and you can go to our Bandcamp page and Google Oso My Brain there, or, you know, search us, and you can buy it digitally on that platform, which is great, or you can pre-order the vinyl.
And Holly, did you, when you were watching my comedy special, did you see Norwood in the audience?
I did! We said, that's Norwood! I have so many questions. I wanted to do an interview with you all about your comedy special. When did you film it?
We filmed it, a year and a half ago, May 2019.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But I met Norwood at through you, obviously, you asked me to open for you guys and Jesse Malin at what's that place?
Hotel Cafe.
And that was such a fun, special night. I don't remember how Norwood ended up coming to the comedy special, but it was awesome to have him in the audience. And then I love Jesse too. And I met all of these people through you. So, well, I'm really excited. What do you guys think are you going to continue to release this stuff through?
Yes. It is actually on Velvet Elk Records. So that's cool. You can also go to their website to figure out how to get it. But yeah, we have a bunch of songs, so they'll just come out every couple of months. We'll drop another one. I guess that's how it works.
You guys are so good. So thank you for continuing to, you know, make music, even though you have a very full-time job already as a mom. Did you like London better or here better?
I love London for a lot of reasons. London is amazing, as is, it's like in New York, and I'm a New Yorker, so you walk there. There's winter there. It rains there. There's people everywhere. It's really great kind of living. You just take the subway. I didn't drive. Neither of us drove there. It's really amazing. And it's also amazing because I didn't have to go to marches there. I didn't have to march there. And I'm, you know, I'm an activist. I march for a lot of things. And it was really so wonderful to not be in a country with number 45. And I didn't have to I was sheltered from a lot of irritation there. I still called my representatives every day about the kids in the camps at the border. Every day I called and asked them to demanded they write that situation, which is still a mess. But it's like, it hurts my heart that policy of this current administration separating parents from their kids is, you know, the level of cruelty and sickness is really terrible. So I did do that every day, but making a phone call is nothing, you know, that was easy to do, but I didn't have to ever worry about school shootings in London, you know? So every day you drop your kids at public school, it crosses your mind, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. And there it's not an issue. So, and it's wonderful there. And I love London. I love New York. But I love LA. I have a life here and I have friends here, and friends are a big, you know, part of it. And, that's where we came here, you know, for Tom's career. He has a career here specifically. And, LA has done nothing but great things for me. And, you know, I'm happy to be here. Sometimes I say that New York is, and like London, but more, even more New York is like your hot unavailable boyfriend. Cause it's like, there's so much adrenaline and there's so much happening and it's so amazing. But like the standard of living is a little bit rough, you know? Cause you're like in the little tiny supermarket and people are banging into you and, you know, all that. You're crossing the street and people are yelling at you. And here is like your good friend. LA is like your good friend. It's like being present with, you know, with some like kindness and softness and ease, right?
Did you guys move back? I love that analogy. Did you guys move back to your old place or get a new one?
We moved back to our old place. We kept our place while we were there, which was great and also helpful in hindsight, because we came home right as they were closing the borders, right at the start of COVID, and the start of, you know, shelter in place COVID. Schools were opened before we got on the plane and closed when we got off, kind of a thing. So it was nice to just have a place to land where we knew all of our stuff, you know.
How has that been, homeschooling during all this?
It's a lot of work. You know, I'm with my kids 24/7 for 7 months. And I love them and they're amazing, but particularly when they're littler. And I still have one that's sort of little, but you need some breaks, you know? So, and this is just like, it's nonstop. There's no, that's why I was explaining my yoga and my meditation, and they're just never somewhere else, you know? So there's never space for my brain to just calm down. So it's a lot of work. At the pandemic experience for families, for parents, is really different than for, you know, single people, or not single people, but people who don't have kids. You know, it isn't about like getting cool stuff done or learning, you know, dealing with your boredom or loneliness or, you know, having time to do things. It's just like, whoa, it's sort of unhuman, the demands, but luxury problems, because I have such a privileged life, you know, to be like, we have food on the table. We have, we don't have a lot to worry about. And no one in my family, my family did get sick in New York, but no one passed away and no one in my home is sick. So, you know, we're just really busy, but I'll suck that up and be busy through this. You know, it's just what we have to do right now.
Yeah. Is Tom working from home or is Tom off?
He was off for a lot. He just started working from home.
Oh my gosh. Well, Holly, yeah. Did I leave out anything? What else do we need to discuss?
I don't know. You said a lot. I'm good. I feel good.
What was your question about the comedy special? You had a question?
Yeah, I just was curious how, when you shot it, which makes sense that you shot it, because at the beginning, it's just you and it cuts to the crowd. And I was like, is the crowd really there? Is this, or did she have to film this alone? And they, you know, is it canned laughter? I was trying to figure out. And then you were like, you guys have a great laugh. And I was like, they would have had to create that laugh. That seems really spontaneous, you know? And then at the end, it opens up and you see that you're there among the people, but also a little bit of the way the backdrop is. And then that just that section of light. And when you're standing in the middle of it, it looks like it's just shot on an iPhone and that the rest is, you know, just put in. And there's like a mic stand, like, oh, that's like a funny little graphic there. But then you cross the line between the light and the dark. So it's like, oh, you really are there. But so a lot of it was technical questions. Like, how did I, but now that I know right away, now I know, you did it. It was live. It answered itself at the end. So I was just wondering when it happened and how the response is, you know, I'm curious about the numbers. I'd love to know about that, but we don't have to talk about it in person. You know, we can talk about it privately.
Yeah. Oh, like production numbers or what do you mean? Production numbers or like how it's received?
Yeah, how it's received.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we could totally talk about that. It just came out yesterday. So it's like brand new.
Yeah, it's great. Congratulations. It's so funny and it's so good. It was great to laugh.
Thank you. I'm so happy that you watched it. That's really interesting because it's like we've just been in a vacuum. You know how it is when you're editing and then
I know
you finally put it out. So
yeah,
it's cool though. Well, thanks, Holly. I'm so happy we got to talk, and I'm really happy you're putting your songs out. They're just they're like crazy catchy. I feel like you need to get them on like commercials or something, like TV shows.
Well, I'm open. Send me the offers, people.
What is your, like, do you have any special sauce tips, like, to help people who want to get stuff made, like, creatively or want to turn? Because I assume, like, a lot of these songs maybe came from a nugget of trauma at some point. Like, how can people take their trauma nuggets and turn them into awesome, creative
song treasure, trauma treasures. Do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, I guess you have to just sort of embrace the story, you know? I think like when you like can lovingly embrace your story, your past, you know, and have consciousness about the evolution, there's so much to talk about there, you know? It's all experience, you know, experience of life. It's so great. Wherever that takes you, you should just treasure it and find what you can. Right now, my son is in a, you know, early grade, and they're learning about, what do they call it? Small moments. And so he has to write these little essays each week about a small moment. And so it's not the whole day. We went to the beach and it was fun. It's like, what was one great thing that happened there, you know? And then speak it and feel it. So, you know, yeah, he has to, and move it, you know? So he has to like talk about move, you know, it isn't just like, we went, it was fun. Like we swam, I said this, I felt this, you know? So it's really cute to see how they like break down the writing process and start kids. And I think that's, you know, it carries on. All of that advice is great for writing a song.
So just be in the small moments.
Yeah.
I'm writing a movie. I'm gonna commission your songs.
I love it.
I need to get your songs in my movie.
That's great.
That's cool. So just like embracing your story, but like, what about people who don't want to talk about their experience and they want to be private and they don't want to like open up about that stuff?
I mean,
maybe because they're embarrassed or they're like ashamed or they're like, they think if people know this stuff about me, they're not going to like me anymore.
Right. I mean, well, it's problematic thinking, right? If they know it and they don't like you, they're not your people. But you can always write a character. I mean, what's interesting to me is always emotional connection, you know, in all storytelling. And in order to do that, you have to find that place, right? You're going to talk about longing or loss or, you know, love or whatever, that you have to sort of go there if you want it to like resonate, if you want somebody to feel that. So if you don't want to exactly tell your own story, you can always do a character. You can write a story like Bruce Springsteen will write about some character, some working class person. He's not working class, right?
Went out for a pack of smokes and I never came back. I'm not a singer.
That was who I randomly thought of, who writes like about characters.
Or like Fleabag. Fleabag, right? She's writing about, you know, a character. Or is she?
Right. It seems so autobiographical though.
So like when you get together with Jesse or Norwood, does a song lyric come to you like in an image, or do you just hear like a phrase, or how does it originate?
So many different places. It can be a melody and then you want to find words that fit the melody, right? I don't really know how it happens. It's something blah, 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 and then it's there, you know?
Yeah.
Battery. Yeah, it can be, or sometimes Jesse will come with a song. He often comes with song with like temp lyrics, like he has some phrasing that he's making up words to fit the phrasing. And sometimes we'll be like, do you want to keep those words? Do you want to change it? What do you want this to be about? And then somehow, you know, you try to find a metaphor or some kind of interesting way of talking about that thing.
You know, sometimes I'll go see musicians and then after their show, they'll be like, oh my God, did you see when I messed up that part? And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking, like, I wouldn't be able to play one note of that 2 hour show you just did. I don't know if there was a mistake. I don't know if there was 30. To me, it was all magic. Like, I don't do music at all, you know, but I also think, try to think of that in terms of my comedy when I go, oh God, there's that part that I wish. And then the thing, and then that thing didn't land, you know? And it's, I'm just thinking, people have no idea how to do comedy. It doesn't matter. It's like jazz. I'm watching jazz just going, it's good.
Yes, I relate. The mistakes are, you know, I'm a very untechnical person. It's all like attitude and very little technique. I squeak by with as little technique as possible, just because it's just not what I do. You know, I could practice for the next 10 years in a room and you can put me on a stage and I'd still make a mistake. You know, it's just sort of, that's sort of the way I work in the world, the way my brain works. So I let go a lot. There's always going to be mistakes. I don't revisit at all because it's kind of pointless.
I love that. And you're more concerned with the heart connection. That's what's more important.
Yeah,
anyway.
I really am. That's,
and the heart connection is not perfect. It's not without mistakes. It's right. Messy.
You want it to be bearable. You want it to be bearable for the people witnessing it. You don't want it to be, you know, sound terrible. you want it to sound as pleasing as possible, but that's not the place that I mean, it's always the place I can do work. I'm always working on, I mean, I practice a lot, but it doesn't guarantee that it's going to go smooth for me, you know.
I love the gritty nature of your new song. All right, this is Instagram Live, so it actually runs out in like 2 minutes. So I want to say I'm so grateful that you stopped by to talk today, and I want to remind everyone to follow Holly at Holly Ramos and also at Oso My Brain here on Instagram. That's the name of her band. Right. And to get her new, what else do they need to do?
What do they need to do? They can follow us, Oso My Brain, on YouTube, on Spotify, on Bandcamp. Give us the love.
Give her all the love, because we're going where it's warm. We're going where the love is.
Because we're available
people now. We're appropriate, available people. And you guys, thanks for watching today. And you can access this podcast if you missed it. You can access it at Let's Process This with Melinda Hill, wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to order Inappropriate Comedy Special at melindahill.com or wherever you get your specials. Any closing comments,
Yes,
Holly?
Definitely. Get Melinda's special. Support comedy. Support art. Support music. Buy the song. And thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, Holly. I'll talk to you soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.